So much needs fixing around the globe and next door.
Do you draw the line between you and I? All that's broken on the river.
It is time for We Act Radio's Conversations Toward Repair. Greetings. This is We Act Radio, broadcasting from historic Anacostia, Washington, D.C., on land that was once the land of the Nacochtank people, who were displaced within about 40 years of Europeans first arriving here. And historic Anacostia is now experiencing another kind of displacement as people and businesses that were established for a long, long time are being displaced very rapidly by gentrification and luxury developments. I am delighted for anyone who is joining us either live or through rebroadcast. This is the first show in a new series focusing on many kinds of violence that are around us in our world, and also paths to building peace that are also available to us. I'm calling this new series Conversations Toward Repair, and I'm your host, Virginia Avniel Spatz. A little bit later in the program, we'll be joined by Netfa Freeman of the Black Alliance for Peace and Pan-African Community Action. But now I am delighted to be joined in our virtual studio by two guests that I am just so happy are helping to launch this new series. We will hear from Lashana Thompson L., who is Executive Director of Peace for DC. And in the past, I have a little bit of a bio here. Ms. Thompson L. served as co-chief of the Violence Reduction Unit in DC's Office of the Attorney General and helped to oversee the Cure the Streets program. She's one of DC's leading restorative justice practitioners and has been active in improving reentry services, especially for women. We are also joined by Nika Grimes, who is operations manager for Peace Academy DC, a part of the Peace for DC program, and a recent graduate, in fact, of the first cohort of the DC Peace Academy. So with that, I will ask Lashana and Nika to each in order just say a few words if I left anything out of your bio, or if you just want to say hello to our audience so that we can get our conversation started. Lashana, can you start?
Yes, thank you so much, Virginia and We Act Radio, for having me. This is my first time on the show, so this is like a major accomplishment for me. I was born and raised in Ward 8, and in 2011, I was released from incarceration, and I returned to Ward 8 after being away for 18 years as a result of some criminal convictions. And this is the first time I've ever heard anyone call out the name of the Native Americans who inhabited that neighborhood, that land in the past. And I just honor you for that. And now I'm sitting here thinking, like, how can I learn more about who actually was wiped out in the other parts of Ward 8? So thank you for holding that up. And I look forward to the conversation.
All right. Thank you. And Nika, some welcoming words or anything I got wrong? You have to unmute.
Excuse me. Hi, We Act Radio viewers, and thank you for having us, Miss Virginia. You are correct. I am the operations manager for Peace for DC, and I'm also a graduate of the first cohort of Peace Academy. I've done just a little background. I've done a lot of community service, probably for half of my life, about 15 years. I got with DCPS and Cure the Streets under the DC Attorney General's office. And I am now the operations manager at Peace Academy. Thank you for having me.
I'm delighted to have you both. And let's start maybe because you were sort of on the inside of it. Nika, you could just tell us a little bit what is actually meant by the DC Peace Academy. What is the program? What was your experience?
Okay. My experience was excellent, and I'm still experiencing, as you can see. It was it expanded my education on frontline work. I felt like I knew the basics to get the point across and follow the model, but Peace Academy really dug in deep when it came to giving me therapy methods that I can use with my participants, self-molding skills. For a bunch of different parts of Peace Academy, over 30 courses. My favorite was with our partnership with Roca, who did cognitive behavioral theory.
Could you, I'm sorry, I'm afraid I don't really know much about, or I'm going to say anything about Roca. Can you go ahead and explain that a little bit?
Roca, they were they're a big partner with Peace Academy. They taught about 6 different classes. They go over CBT, which is cognitive behavioral theory, and just reforming how you think, catching your impulsivities. They broke down how the brain actually works, different parts of the brain, so we could recognize when something happens, what part of the brain we're using and which part we really need to be using, catching our habits and reinventing them into something better.
Okay. That was very clear. We run across a lot of names and a lot of acronyms, and not everybody listening will know them, even though some people are really used to them. And then, of course, yeah, there are things where the same letters pronounced one way or in one context means one thing, like BLM in many contexts means Black Lives Matter, but it's also the Bureau of Land Management. And I have to say, there were some times when I was really confused why these people were talking about what they're talking about. So, you know, we do have to be just a little, I don't know, a little careful. And also, I want to just point out as we're starting this conversation that our listeners will, many of them will be familiar with DC and with Ward 8 in particular, which Lashana already mentioned is one of the two wards that are east of the Anacostia River, and DC has experienced huge divides over certainly all my 35 years here and much, much longer. We have the Anacostia River. We also have farther to the northwest, Rock Creek Park, which divides the city in a different way. And some people know those like the back of their hand, and then some listeners from some other place in the country or the world won't know them at all. So I like to make sure we're talking on awareness of both audiences, and also awareness that the models that DC uses are developed elsewhere, and vice versa, that DC can be a model for other places that are trying to work on gun violence. And so, Lashana, I'd like to ask you to maybe give us a little wider view of what DC for Peace is. The Peace Academy is one program, and DC for Peace is a wider organization, but also very new to the landscape. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So Peaceful DC is a private foundation that was created by Roger Marmet, M-A-R-M-E-T. So Roger created Peaceful DC because his son was murdered in 2018, basically driving through a neighborhood in DC, and someone was shooting at a person across the street and shot his son and murdered him. And I think it's safe to say when Roger started to learn more about the gun violence, which he always refers to the inequality of gun violence, I think it just really took him for a loop, and he felt compelled to commit his life to making a difference by supporting the frontline peacemakers who have the relationships and influence and credibility to actually prevent shootings and reduce gun violence in high-risk neighborhoods. And so he started Peaceful DC and hired me as the first executive director. And one of our efforts is the DC Peace Academy. And so we started the DC Peace Academy because we wanted to train the frontline workers and make sure that they have all the tools that they need to do the great work that they've been charged to do, connecting with high-risk individuals, using their credibility to help change community norms and help move people throughout the transformation process. Understanding that this is a very complex problem, we've decided to teach things. And let me go back a bit. Like before, when we started Peaceful DC, we consulted with and had multiple meetings with the local community-based organizations who have been funded by the district government to facilitate CVI, community violence intervention. So they told us what they needed to learn, and they told us who should be teaching these classes. So it's hyper-local. All of the teachers are DC-based practitioners who've been working in community violence intervention for decades, and they are experts in restorative justice and transformative justice, and they are the ones that have taken the lead on teaching the students. And what we've learned from the first cohort that it is about teaching and learning and developing tools, but it's also about creating a safe space and a brave space for our frontline peacemakers to be able to come together and process trauma, whether it's trauma from their past, trauma from the vicarious trauma that they experience every day, or whether it's, you know, the stuff that's happening in real time in their communities. And we wanted to try to break down the silos and build communication across neighborhoods, across community-based organizations. And so Peaceful DC, I think, did more than we thought it would do, because we was initially thinking we want them to be able to learn the tools that they need to make a difference, but they actually created a healing space for themselves and for one another. And that's what I'm most excited about and most proud of. And so like the cognitive behavior theory that Nika mentioned earlier, it's basically like a user-friendly way to utilize cognitive practices with high-risk individuals and helping them learn to regulate their emotions when they are in crisis or if they have a conflict and they've experienced a lot of trauma, and you want them to slow that cycle down and make a different choice, evaluate, you know, their values, you know, the consequences of their actions, and do something different. Somebody actually has to facilitate that process for them. And we believe that our frontline outreach workers are like best positioned to do that. And we are not a fan of like just responding to harm. Like we do believe in, you know, the need for healing and holding space for people who have been impacted by harm, but we really want to prevent harm and prevent shootings and prevent homicides before they happen. And I just want to say, you mentioned East of the River. I know two moms who have lost three sons in the same neighborhood. You know, one, I grew up with her, and I think she wouldn't mind me saying her name, Saditra Brown, lost three sons in the same neighborhood, East of the River. And another woman who I don't know personally, so I won't say her name. She lives in Washington, grew up in Washington Highlands, raised her family in Washington Highlands, lost three sons to gun violence in the same neighborhood. And, you know, all of this has been in the 10 years since I've been released. So I just wanted to hold space for that.
Yes, thank you. And I do want to take just a moment to, as you said, to acknowledge that there is so much trauma for the people when you're and I do want to, maybe we'll elaborate a little bit on what frontline worker means in this context, but simply living or working east of the river means that you are exposed to some level of trauma absolutely every day, every time you get on the bus, every time you stand on the street. My own experience is more limited than people who grew up there, but you know, I've sat in bus stops where somebody had been previously murdered and their blood was still on the ground. We are, some of us are experiencing this all the time. And then there are people other places in our city. And unfortunately, people who are making decisions often haven't got any of that experience. And we are constantly asking the most traumatized people to be like the calmest, even if somebody's pointing a gun at them or whatever might be going on. I did want to just ask you to bring that up a tiny bit or a little bit more, just to explain a little bit more what it means to be on the front lines of trying to prevent conflict.
Yes, I'll try to be quick. It's kind of complicated because in DC, we like to complicate things. But we have several district government agencies that are funding community violence intervention, which is the public health approach to gun violence intervention. We have DeJuan's office, the Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement, and they have some community-based organizations that are working under their model, and they're funded to staff up the communities that are high risk. And they do that by hiring credible individuals who have relationships. Sometimes they're called violence interrupters. We have the DYRS, which hires credible messengers to work with young people who are committed to the Department of Youth Rehabilitation Services. And that basically means they are committed to the system, but they're living in community and they have a credible messenger assigned to them to help them through the transformation process and, you know, to stay on the right track. And then you have programs that are funded through the DC Office of the Attorney General, Cure the Streets. They have 10 programs in 10 different neighborhoods where they're employing the Cure Violence Global Model, which was started by a medical doctor, Dr. Gary Slutkin. And he believes that we should treat violence in the same way that we should treat a disease, hiring those who live in and have ties to high-risk neighborhoods and allowing them to help to detect and mediate conflicts, change community norms, and treat trauma. And then you have safe passage workers who are working under the Deputy Mayor of Education. And you also have hospital violence intervention programs at MedStar, Howard University, and Georgetown, I believe it is. I could be wrong about that third hospital. But basically, those frontline workers, what they do is they're in the community daily, and they are building trust, engaging community. They keep their ear to the streets, and hopefully people will contact them when they know about conflicts or they know about challenges that people have in the community that could potentially lead to violence. And so their job is to detect and mediate conflicts, as I said earlier. And they are tracking the work that they do. The Cure Violence Global, they use the ComCare database system, and they're practicing relentless engagement and really helping to move high-risk individuals through the transformation process and change their thinking, change their behavior. And again, changing norms, because some of this is cultural. You know, I mentioned earlier, I went to prison when I was 19 years old. For me, violence had become the norm. I wasn't born that way. I used to be afraid of violence. I used to run from fights. I was afraid to fight, and I got chastised for it repeatedly. My parents, my older siblings, my peers. And so eventually I succumbed to that violence and got trapped in that cycle, and I caused serious harm. And so a lot of it from my perspective is cultural. And so, again, it's a really, really big charge. And I appreciate you for acknowledging, like, we're asking people who have been exposed to this trauma, complex chronic trauma, who have transformed their lives, to go back in the communities where they grew up, the neighborhoods that they love, and now help other people do the same. And I think it's unjust if we don't provide them with the proper support and resources and coaching that they need. One of the other things about the DC Peace Academy, we have a social worker and we have life coaches, and the students who are frontline peacemakers have access to these social workers and these life coaches so that they can develop themselves professionally and personally. And our most important goal is to make sure that they can be the best that they can be, because we consider them our heroes. They're the ones out there risking their lives every day to try to prevent shootings.
Thank you. I appreciate all of that. And I know that Nika has worked as a credible messenger and could maybe speak to that a little bit more. So I'm going to bring her back into the stream. And while I do that, I do want to mention another question that your remarks just brought up. And for those who might just be joining us, we are speaking with Lashana Thompson-L of Peace for DC and Nika Grimes of the DC Peace Academy, which is a program within Peace for DC. This is We Act Radio. And I'll let Nika go ahead and say anything you'd like to add about the experience of being a credible messenger and the kind of support that is useful there. And then I'll ask my other question.
I have had experience in being a credible messenger, but I have more experience in being an outreach worker for Cure the Streets, which I'm also still currently an outreach worker. And being an outreach worker, you deal with participants every day. Your job is to form a risk reduction plan. I'll explain what that is. A risk reduction plan is you set a number system of how high risk they are, and you try to bring that number down to an average with goal setting, as well as using the things that we learned in Peace Academy. As I said, those therapeutic methods, teaching them how to deal with their anger management, or just things that they'll see run into on a daily basis that could involve violence. These guys and ladies are set in these what we call target areas, where we call them, the target areas are places in which we have designated high risk in violence, in gun violence and domestic violence. And they are succumbed to this stuff every day. So we just try to guide them and keep them focused and help them advance as much as we can. So it's just basically like a day-to-day life coach, really.
Thanks, Nika. I want to also, if possible, bring into our conversation Nikita Gilbert, who is the Director for Learning at the DC Peace Academy. And I think we lost her. We'll perhaps have that conversation at another time. And I will bring up the question that has been in the back of my mind. I think that our Director for Learning is going to be back with us in just a moment. But I'm going to go ahead and ask one question that has come up for me as both of you were speaking, and that is the relationship of either the frontline violence interrupters or the Peace for DC as an organization, relationship with the courts and with police and with incarceration, because I'll just leave it there. I could go on, but how about I just let you speak to that in any way that you would like to answer. And I'm going to ask Lashana to go ahead and speak on that.
Thank you for that question, Virginia. And just a part of CBT is labeling your feelings, right? So I'll just acknowledge that that's always a difficult question to answer, because we always want to make sure that we're not sort of like adding fuel to the fire. Like, we have a challenging relationship with government, we being African-American people in this country. And so I would never want to make matters worse by saying the wrong thing. But what I will say is that by using a public health approach to community violence intervention, we rely on transformative, restorative systems. And so we don't rely on harmful systems that tend to lean towards using punishment as a way to change behavior, because we don't believe that punishment actually is successful at changing behavior. And we believe that actually incarceration causes more trauma, and it adds to the cyclical, like generational violence that we're seeing. And so, for example, like we had the city under siege, and we had mass incarceration in the 90s. And a lot of what we're seeing now, from my perspective, is the aftermath of that. And so take me from example, I'm almost 50 and I have adult children and I have grandchildren, and my grandchildren are growing up in the same neighborhood where I grew up at. And I am the matriarch of my family at 50 years old. And we have layers of trauma that we are coping with: poverty, trauma, you know, lack of education with the DC public school system, the food deserts, the lack of health care. You know, it could go on and on. Not much has changed for certain demographics of individuals. And so we believe that we should treat the root causes of violence, and we should create healthy systems, because the existing systems are not addressing the needs or the times that we're in right now. And so we think that, like, we need to be innovative, and we need to use evidence-based approaches that actually have been proven to work, scientific approaches that have been proven to work. And so this is one of them: Cure Violence Global, CBT, restorative justice, and things of that nature. And if there's anything more specific you want to ask me about that, that could be helpful, I'm open.
Well, I do want to give you an opportunity to speak to critics of Cure the Violence or any one of the violence interrupter programs. A lot of people will say that, you know, the data just isn't there, and then other people blame the inconsistent nature of funding. There's all kinds of issues there. And just, you know, what would you say to people who say, well, I don't see the evidence?
I would say, where is the evidence that policing or incarceration works? And nobody is talking about doing away with police or prisons. And so, and I would also say we should evaluate these programs. Cure the Streets has been operating since 2018. The Woman's Office has been operating since 2018, almost 5 years. We should hold our city accountable, and we should encourage them and demand that they evaluate these programs. And people have a right to know if they are working.
That is something our city is not, or I don't think we're alone in it, not very good at. You know, we are in, I think we're in what, year 17 now of the 5-year experiment of mayoral control of our city schools. It was supposed to be, you know, evaluated and then, you know, changed. And instead we just keep coasting. So thank you. Those were very powerful remarks that I will use if someone, you know, raises this issue again. Because I do see it coming up, and there is a lot of fight. You know, people have their favorite programs that they want to see funded, and then we work on this scarcity idea, and people are fighting for a little bit of power and a little bit of funds, and it becomes a bad cycle. And I when we're talking about funding, and when we're talking about the deep nature of this, you know, I don't even know if we can call it a problem, this aspect of our society. Gun violence is incredibly costly, as Peace for DC funded a study that came out last year that showed that just in DC, in one single year, we lost $1 billion to various forms of trying to deal with gun violence. And individual shootings cost us $1 million when you count in the people who are investigating, the medical costs, and none of that is even factoring in the costs, the human costs, and the way that our society is just constantly barraged by, you know, by this this scourge, I guess. I'm coming up with all these funny words. I don't know what else to call it. So we don't have much time left, but if you would like to maybe address that that study or give us anything else you'd like to say about the cost. And I'll let Lashana speak and then Nika, and then I think we will have to start wrapping up soon.
I think you summed it up well, Virginia. So I'll just say the human cost is devastating. We have three students that started. We just started school on Tuesday. We have our second cohort of 25 students, and three of them have lost two siblings to gun violence. And we sat in circle yesterday, and I'm going to be honest, we talked about it like it was so normal because I lost one sibling. I'm sure other people have lost at least one sibling or parent. And many, many friends. And I was just taken aback by the fact that we got up out of circle and went about our day, like as if we didn't just hear what we heard. And so the human cost is devastating our people. And I'm really worried. And as I said yesterday in circle, you know, what I bring to the table is passion, love for my people and passion for healing. And I'll just leave it at that, because the cost of gun violence, I don't even think we know yet, like, how much it's costing us.
And Nika, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I agree with you, Lashana. As far as the financial deficit, that when it pertains to gun violence, it's just, it's ridiculous, especially when being a frontline worker, you see all this money going into the investigation and the search for the gentleman. But what about the mom that lost her child? What about the child that lost their father or mother or grandma to gun violence? Are we educating them on how to come back from that? Are we putting money into that? Because literally the money that they're putting into is the frontline workers partially and then sending us to fix them, when I feel like they might need family funding in general and be educated as far as how to deal with it. And Peace Academy, which I love, teaches us how to teach other people how to deal with the trauma. I can go on and on, but I do agree with my director on that.
Well, thank you. And we could go on and on, but we have come to the bottom of the hour. And who might be just joining, or a reminder, we ACT Radio, broadcasting from historic Anacostia, what was once Nacochtank land. And I am just so grateful to Lashana Thompson L, who is the executive director of Peace for DC, and Nika Grimes, who is the, let me get this right, operations manager for the DC Peace Academy. And we will have to have Nikita Gilbert, the director for learning, a different day. And certainly we can continue this conversation again later. Thank you both so much for being with us. And I am Virginia Avniel Spatz, signing off for We Act Radio's first segment in Conversations Toward Repair. Thank you for being with us. Do join us for future conversations. You can learn more at weactradio.com. Peace.